Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. I am Reggie Darden, and I am excited, overjoyed to have a great guest on with me today, Mr. Cliff Kitchen. And I'm really excited in that, you know, this podcast is focused on Kenpo, but of course we, you know, I want to hear from all martial artists. And I'm really excited because I have Cliff, or excuse me, Mr. Kitchen has been featured on a show called Kitty Kai. And if you guys have not, guys and gals have not seen this show, oh my goodness, watch this show. I'm so in love with it. It's for those that are not familiar with it. It is a reality show that's focused on some martial artists and their kind of I don't know. I guess you could say a rivalry, a healthy competition between a few schools and. There's just some kind of interesting interactions between the various teachers that are featured on it, and it's very, you know, very very interesting to watch and fun to watch. We've been, you know, involved in the martial arts as long as I have, and definitely. Check that out. It is, you can find it on Discovery Plus or Max. Yep. Or, yep. You know, just, do some due diligence and, take a look for that. But,
cool.
Yeah, I'm going to, kind of do this a little bit different than I usually do. I usually kind of, go over my background, but, you know, you guys and gals are not here for me. We're here for the guests. So I'm just going to say that, you know, I have advanced ranks in Kenpo, American Kenpo, and Chinese Kenpo, if you want to get specific. And I also have advanced ranks in Capoeira. And then I have not-so-advanced ranks in Taekwondo, Hapkido. And I did some boxing, so that's just my little bit, and you know we'll kind of get into more as we go along. But I'm going to turn it over to you to tell us how you got started in the martial arts. You know, where did your journey begin, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure, I I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, and grew up. I'm 54 years old, right? So I grew up as a teenager in the 80s, which was really rough time in a lot of major cities, Detroit being particularly rough with all the drugs and stuff that was going on during that time. And I, my family, my father was, he was a, what you would call a hustler, right? So this is something that I mentioned in the TV show. And so we didn't live a quote unquote traditional, you know, middle class lifestyle. And so I was always looking for some type of escape, like we do, right? As kids, you want to look for an escape from your, you know, your day to day, and which was chaotic for me. It was unpredictable, scary at times. And so having something that I can cling to kind of take me out of that is what I did. So I probably 8, 9, 10 years old, I started watching a lot of martial arts movies, obviously Bruce Lee and all that, and Chuck Norris's, and you know, Jim Kelly. So some of those movies. And then we had a show on in Detroit at the time called Kung Fu Theater. We'd come on at 11:30 at night on Saturdays, and I would watch that until, you know, I watched that and watched some other stuff. But I watched that all the time. So all of the classics, right? Five Deadly Venoms, all that, and just kind of got into those movies and really was taken with the martial arts. And I think because it was such a contrast to the life that I was living every day, right? With all the crime, my father's out here doing stuff. And, you know, you see a hero role in the town, or he's already there. He goes, there's the bad guys. He beats the bad guys, saves the day, you know, rides off to another city, do the same thing. So I saw those things and I was like, man, this is cool. Cause this is nothing like what I see every day. So, and then obviously the fighting aspect of it, you know, I was hooked. And so when I was, I think, 11, 12 years old, you know, I talked to my father about signing me and my brother, because I have a brother 3 years younger, signing us up for martial arts class. And so he took us to a Taekwondo school, And just like they do, I mean, these guys have been, Taekwondo guys have been running this thing for a long time. When it comes to the business end of running a martial arts school, right? They've got it down. And so we went in there, you know, we had the whole sales pitch. Everything was good. Everything looked great. Me and my brother were excited about joining. And then when he told my father the price, that was it, right? Didn't sign us up. So I continued watching the movies, all that. I was buying magazines, getting books. In fact, I have a book right now. I probably shouldn't say this. I guess it's fine now because the library is not there anymore. But there was a library across from my school that I checked out a book on American karate. And it's stamped 1986. I still have the book in my office at home right now. So, I mean, and so that's, I had a friend that did Hapkido. You mentioned Hapkido. I had a friend that did Hapkido. And so he would share things with me, you know, more use me as a, you know, as like a Bob dummy, I guess, instead of anything else. But I would pick things up. I would learn. And back then the magazines had, you know, you have some prominent martial artist. It could be a movie star. It could be just a martial artist out there. And they would put, you know, a page or two of, you know, some techniques. It could be some grappling stuff. It could be striking, whatever. And it's step by step. And you could teach yourself these things. And that's what I did. That's what I had until I joined the Air Force right out of high school. And that's when I took my first official martial arts class. Actually, I tell people it was at my first base. I took a Japanese jiu-jitsu class. But actually, I was an Air Force policeman or security police, security forces, whatnot, law enforcement. And so we learned defensive tactics while I was there. And the basis for that was Aikido. So I did that. That was my first official training in martial arts is when I joined the Air Force.
Okay, very nice, very nice. Well, we're somewhat similar there. Oh, sorry, got the dogs. I was hoping they were going to be quiet. Sorry, listeners, but yeah, you might hear my dogs. So. I was in the Army, that was a little break in my training. So I, you know, started at a Kempo school, and then, you know, after a few years, joined the military, and so that's when I got to do, you know, the training that they give you in the mm-hmm. you know, in the military, kind of your basic fight training, combat training.
Right.
And then while I was in, that's when I got to, do some Taekwondo and some Hapkido and the boxing. So, I can relate to that,
right.
You know, that part of the training.
Yeah, as I started, so I got to California, it was my first assignment. I was there for about 18 months. And I did Japanese jiu-jitsu for the time I was there. Don't remember the name of the instructor or even if I'd gotten promoted at all. But I was just excited to be, you know, taking a real martial art, right, from an instructor. In fact, I was so caught up in it. You know, Bruce Lee was in school went to college to be in philosophy is what he majored in, right? So I started out majoring in philosophy. I wanted to be a martial artist that way. And so I left that base and went to Turkey. And I was there doing Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Provide Comfort. And you had several of the, Turkey, for whatever reason. And I guess it's that way. Taekwondo is big everywhere. So Taekwondo was big there. I trained with some of those guys while I was there. But I was only there for 15 months. And then I ended up in Columbus, Mississippi. In fact, I got my assignment and it said, you're going to Columbus Air Force Base. And I was like, wow, I'll be in Ohio. I'll be close to home. You know, I'll be able to go visit. Nah, Columbus Air Force Base, Mississippi, small town. But I got there and I'm coming from overseas. I don't have a car. So I go down to the local dealership. Salesman's trying to sell me a car like they do. Take his card, stick it in my pocket. Didn't even look at it. And I get home and I pull his card out and I take a look and it said Oliver Miller, you know, fourth degree black belt, Karate International Council kickboxing, North American super middleweight champ, Gulf States Golden Gloves champ. I jumped back in the car that I had, right, borrowed, and drove back down there, talked to him. And it was a Tuesday, and they were having class that night, and I started that night with them. So I was in Columbus from January of 96 until May, or 90, I'm sorry, January of 92 until May of 96. And I was all in for that first year and a half-ish. I trained every day. He had class on Tuesday and Thursday, and then he trained at another city close by on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I would do that. And then I started competing. I think I was, and I was new. I was a yellow belt or orange belt. And he asked me if I wanted to start kickboxing. And I'm like, yeah, right. I'm like, I want to do it all. So I started kickboxing as an amateur. So on Saturdays, we'd either be, most Saturdays, either at a kickboxing match or at a point karate match, open tournaments and stuff. So I competed a lot and, earned my black belt in Taekwondo from him and the other instructors, probably about just under 2 years. But I tell people, you know, the whole thing about promotions and belts, it really differs depending on who you're training with, your age, all the, how much you're training in it. And the belts themselves, because there was a guy there that was training when I started as a white belt there, he was an orange belt. When I got the black belt, he was still an orange belt. I went to second degree, he was still an orange belt. And I tell people, you can't look at that belt, no matter how many stripes are on the belt, none of that stuff. Now, it should give you an indication of where that person's skill level is, but not necessarily. So, you know, I trained there. There was one of the guys, black belts there, that who was also a police officer. So we, you know, he was in the Army just like you were, in military police like I was, right? So we kind of hit it off, and he had a third degree in judo. So I started training in judo with him, competing in judo, went to the Mississippi State Games, won a gold in my weight division, and then a silver in the open weight division in judo. Did that, and then we had a, and now I'm 4.5 years I'm at this base, but there was an instructor pilot, because it was a undergraduate pilot training base, that came there, and he was a 6-degree black belt in Aikido. And so I'm like, okay, this is like similar to the stuff I learned when I was going through training, so let me start training with him. And he's on base, so I'm like, great. So I started training with him in Aikido, did that, and I kept training in all those systems until I left there in May of 96, went down to teach in Texas at the police academy I went to, and so taught there, and then I was the guy teaching defensive tactics, right? I was like, this is crazy, but it's cool. When it was time to teach that portion of the curriculum, they pulled me up, and I led those classes, and I was like, this is awesome, man. So I stayed there about 4 years, left, went to, let me back up, because when I got to Texas, I still trained myself. I got back into Japanese jiu-jitsu and started training in Kali a little bit more than I had been prior, because I did a little bit when I was in Mississippi. But when I got there to San Antonio, started working with some Kali instructors, Japanese jiu-jitsu. And there was another instructor there with me. Him and I are still good friends to this day, right? 30 years later, he had a brown belt in judo, but he also had a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? I knew about it, right? Because I'd seen a UFC at this point, but I didn't know much about it. And so he introduced me to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I did a couple of seminars with College Machado up there and whatnot in Austin, because he had some students there, because he's up in Dallas. But, and again, Kaju Kimbo, there was another instructor doing Kaju Kimbo. So I just, whatever I could, I tried to absorb as much as I can from whoever I could, because being in the military, as you know, you're traveling around a lot. And so it was hard, because I continued to get promoted. When I was in San Antonio, I got promoted to third degree. And so I was lucky, because I was still affiliated with my instructor and the instructors back in Mississippi. And that's how I got promoted. But as you move along, you're not training with those people every day. And so it got a little bit harder. But I left Texas, went to Virginia, and I was a recruiter. So I went to a high school, and there was a Marine Corps Sergeant Major there. And after I got done speaking to the students, he says, what kind of martial arts do you do? And I'm like, I didn't say anything about martial arts. What are you talking about? But he was a martial artist himself, right? And he was like, I can just kind of tell the way you move and this kind of thing. And I'm like, okay. And he said, and then we talked, and he said, well, why don't you come? My buddy, he's got a school around the corner. He's teaching American karate, and he was a kickboxer as well. So this is in December 99, January 2000. So I go into the school, meet this guy, and I was just talking to him yesterday. We've been friends ever since, too. This guy, him and I have, you know, our martial arts background is very similar in how we came up training and whatnot, and we both were kickboxers and all that. So I had, because when I was in Mississippi, I went from amateur to pro. I won a couple of amateur titles, went to pro, and then I didn't fight while I was in full contact while I was in Texas. But when I got to Virginia, 2001, he's like, you want to fight? And I'm like, yeah, man, I want to get back into it. I'm still young, 30 years old. I'm like, yeah, let me get back into this. And so we get set up for a fight. I was super middleweight, right? 167 pounds, 68 pounds, whatever it was. Go to the match, and like it happens sometimes, the title fight fell through. One of the guys missed weight, couldn't fight. And I was the only other guy on the card that had a little bit more, I had more experience than the guy I was going to compete against. And they said, would you want to move up and fight for this title? And I'm like, man, I would train for a 3-round fight. This is a 5-round kickboxing match. I don't know. Right. And I'm like, forget it. I was that way. I'll do it, man. Whatever. Cause I was like, if I lose, I train for a 3-round fight. I have a reason for losing. I wasn't prepared for this, but I was always, game, man, to fight and, you know, and train with whoever and learn as much as I could. So I fought that guy and I beat him. I won the super middleweight. It was the International Fighters Association, you know, super middleweight title. I'm like, wow, that was crazy out of nowhere. And, you know, I continued to fight a few more times while I was there and trained with my buddy in American Karate, met some folks like Jerry Pennington, who is the one that actually promoted me to 6th, 7th, and 8th degree. But he trained, fought with, you know, Joe Lewis, right?
Very nice.
And who else? Yeah, because everybody knows Joe Lewis, right? Father of American kickboxing. In fact, one of the guys, so I won that title. One of the other guys I fought, his name's Phil Maldonado. He's the president of the Joe Lewis Association right now. And I fought him, and Joe Lewis was working his corner. And I beat him. I broke his nose with a sidekick, but I beat him. Those guys, they're like Terminators. You can't knock them out. But I beat him, and I'm like, this is crazy, right? The father of American kickboxing is working the corner of this guy, and I beat him, right? This is, and he's the president of his association now, so this is one of his top guys. It's like, this is, I mean, for me, it's surreal, right? I'm coming from Detroit. My father was a heroin addict. I'm sitting up there, sleeping next to a kerosene heater sometimes in the winter because our heat would get turned off. Well, we were evicted out of our house, and we're staying with friends and all this kind of stuff, and here I am across the ring from, you know, the guy that started full contact fighting, the guy that Bruce Lee wanted in Return of the Dragon and said no because he was the world heavyweight kickboxing champion and he wasn't going to lose to anybody on camera, right? And train with Bruce after that. I'm across from this guy. And so it was an awesome experience. Fought a few more times. And my last fight before I left Virginia was in 2003. And it's Joe Lewis again, right? And one of his guys. And I'm like, gosh, man. And this time I was recruiting in the Air Force. Hours a little off. I'm a little heavier. I'm like 180 pounds, right? So I ended up fighting for light heavyweight title in his organization. And man, 5-round fight. I trained for it. This guy comes across the ring and I'm 5'8". He's about 6 foot. And he hits me with a right hand I never saw coming, right? I get hit so hard. I don't remember anything to this day. And so I don't know. I was told later that when I got hit, I reacted with a right hand left hook and kind of tied him up. And that kind of got me through the rest of that round. And I went out in the second round, fought, came back into the second round. And my buddy that I met who had the American Karate School, he was working my corner along with one of the guys that I train with now, who's an ex, you know, Green Beret. And we can get into that, the stuff that I'm doing with him. But because it's more self-defense based stuff, which is my focus in martial arts anyway, self-defense. But they're working my corner. I come back at the end of the second round. They dumped the water all over my head. And I got told then because your nose was bleeding in the whole second round. And I'm like, what? And they didn't know how it reacted seeing the blood if they wiped it. So I'm like, it didn't bother me. But OK, that was cool. I thought I wanted to drink the water when you dumped it on my head. But I went back out after getting some corner advice from, Jim West, who's my other, the Green Beret instructor that I train with now. He, it's like, listen, he's tall, he's long, but he's coming straight ahead. Hit him with a front leg side kick to the body, drop down, hit him with a right hand left hook, and then spin him around because then he's going to be, disorientated based on that. And probably 80% of the rest of the fight, that's what I did. And we ended up breaking his, it would be his left cheek. His right cheek. His right cheek with left hands because he kept walking into it. And it was, and so at the end of the fight, I go up to Joe Lewis, we take pictures and stuff. And he's like, I know what you were doing. And I'm like, what? It's like, you kept on hitting him and then moving him and stuff. And I go, I told him, I go, I heard a long time ago watching boxing, I heard Sugar Ray Leonard say one time he wanted to leave the ring looking the same way he did when he walked into it. And I go, that was my goal. I didn't want to get, there were times I didn't, right? You get hurt. But I go, my goal was to hit that guy and not get hit. So, yeah, I'm going to move him around. I'm not going to just walk ahead and trade punches. That's silly. No, I'm not doing that. But, and so I was at that point, I think I was a fourth degree black belt, Taekwondo. And then I moved from Virginia to here in North Carolina. I went to Florida first, and then I retired out of there. I just trained. I trained folks, and I didn't do any fighting or anything while I was in Florida. Retired from the Air Force. Moved back to Virginia as a pharmaceutical rep for a little bit in the Tidewater area, a year. That's it. And then I left and went, came here to North Carolina and started. I was a fourth degree. I decided I wanted to teach. So I was teaching at just a small club at the amenity center in my neighborhood just for fun. And it started to grow. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll go ahead. You know, I'm retired now. I'm not going to move if I don't want to. I'm going to go ahead and open up a school. So I did. And for 2 years, from 2013, 2015, I would go teach at Air Force ROTC at this high school from 6:15 in the morning to 2:15 afternoon, open up my dojo at 4:15 and teach until 8 o'clock. And I did that for 2 years. And then I, you know, talked to my wife and I said, you know, I think I want to do this thing full time and just teach martial arts. And so since January of 2015, this is all I've done is teach martial arts. And I've got a few other things that I do. And I don't have an after school program, like I mentioned before. I get it and I understand it. And there's a need for that. It's just not my focus. But I am down here in NASCAR country. So I have several NASCAR folks that I train, you know, privately and whatnot. So, you know, I supplement not having a after school program with that and, you know, teaching a few other things here. So that's kind of my journey. And in that time, since I've been here, I went from fifth to sixth, seventh and eighth degree. So now I still have a fifth degree in Taekwondo, but I have a seventh degree in American karate, an eighth degree in American Burrito style karate, which is another form of American karate, and then an eighth degree in American extension fighting, which is my Jim West, the instructor that I train with now, introduced to me by my buddy in Virginia, Roger Dabney, because they've known each other for 40 years. I've been training on and off with Jim for about 25 years in his system. You know, he was also black belt in many different systems, 10th degree, all that. But his was, you know, experience-based learning, right? Being Green Beret and all that kind of stuff. So that's who I'm training with now, you know, most of the time. And, you know, that's where I'm at, man. Just, you know, trying to get better every day.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh my goodness. I really love a couple things that came to mind as you were telling your story. One, I just loved how you were just all in, much like me, I, you know, grew up watching, you know, Kung Fu Theater and,
right,
you know, Black Belt Theater and all the different movies and whatnot. And, didn't get to train initially when I wanted to. My father would not let me do it.
Right.
I can't verify this story, but he told me that he used to be a bodyguard for Muhammad Ali.
And, oh wow!
He said that at the time, you know, martial arts was getting popular in the United States, and he said the other guys that he was working with were all talking about, oh yeah, I'm learning this karate stuff, and you know, I can pull a guy's heart out and show it to him while he's, you know, still breathing, and
right,
that sort of thing. And so he had it in his mind that the martial arts was all about killing, and so, you know, he just would not let that happen.
Right. Yeah, so, it's that's it's funny you say that. I tell folks, my mother used to tell me, because both my parents are gone now, but my mother used to tell me, don't put your feet on people. That your feet are dirty, right? This, that, and the other. And I'm like, man, if she could see me now, right? Like this guy. Yeah, I've won kickboxing titles and I've won all these different turns. I mean, I still compete now. Not full contact though. Since 2019, I've taken my students here to the North Carolina State Games. In 2019, we went to the State Games of America, and I had a couple of students, win some medals there. But 2021, I took them to the State Games over in the capital of Raleigh, and they competed and everything, and they're ranked in the state, right? And my goal is to help these kids not just learn how to fight, which is a focus of mine, but to become better people, right? That's what we do, and be well-rounded. And a lot of them are going to want to go to college and things like that. And I'm like, listen, having the fact that you're a state karate champion on your resume or your application for something is pretty good, right? Not only did you become a black belt, which is hard to do when people see you're dedicated to something, but you were able to take that and compete and do well. So So I took them, and I would look at every time, because, you know, people are people and they make mistakes. So I would go through and look at the roster after and see where everybody was placed in the right spot, and they were, you know, right medals and all that. And I saw that they had a guy my age that competed, right? But it was only one person, so he didn't compete anybody. He just won. So the next year, they headed in Raleigh. I'm like, I'm going to sign up. And primarily for my students, because, you know, we teach them a lot. And we tell them, you should do this and why. And we give them all this stuff, but they never really get to see us put it into practice. They do on the floor, but it's different, right? And so because there, you're the instructor. Typically, you're going to be better than everybody else in there anyway. So it doesn't matter, right? That's all they're used to seeing. You're the top guy. But to see you compete against someone else and do the things that you're teaching them to do, I thought was a great opportunity. So I did that, won the gold, and then I went back to the games in 2023, won the gold again, and then I did it this year back in June, won the gold, but I I hurt my shoulder, so I've got this impingement syndrome thing going, and ended up, the guy ducked, and he came up in the pocket of my shoulder with his head, and I'm like, so it stretched him, so I tore some tendons and stuff, I think, but no rotator cuff injury, nothing like that, but I still thought it was important for me to demonstrate to my students, right, that I'm not just telling you this. I walk the walk, you know, talk the talk, walk the walk type deal. I want to continue to be able to do this well into old age. People will say, you know, you plan on teaching until you're, you know, 70, 80 years old. You know, if I'm able, absolutely, I'll plan on doing it. You know, hopefully when I do go, it'll be on the floor, right? Like he's trying to teach us some grappling stuff. He's laying down, but he's not getting up. Yeah, that'll be it, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, I like to say that I'll stop. You can stop training 10 minutes after your dad. So
right. Yeah. No doubt. I told my oldest daughter. She said, you know, I'm sure you're gonna want to have a military funeral. You retired from the Air Force and all like this. I'm like, yeah, that would be cool. But whatever you do, make sure I have a gi on, and you know, throw some escrima sticks or something, some nunchucks or something there with me, just in case I need it where I'm going. So you know. It is, man. It's a, you talk about Kenpo karate, which I wish I had an opportunity to train more, and I trained a little bit with Kenpo, but I wish I had an opportunity to train more just because I try to teach my, even students, they're 5, 6 years old. I'm teaching them, you know, about how to generate power and whatnot. Right. And so the science of it, I guess that's it. And so Kenpo karate is very science-based, and I love that. And I, you know, I knew about Ed Parker and all that from back in the day, all the reading I did, and I have several of his books as well. But when I saw Jeff Speakman in The Perfect Weapon, oh my goodness. My goodness, man. I was like, look at this dude move, man. It's crazy, right? So I was, and then he fought some Taekwondo guys, and I'm like, you know, this is how you can beat some Taekwondo guys, which is what I started out doing, right? I was even, when I was down in Texas, I was even on the Air Force Taekwondo team. I did that. I mean, whatever I could do, if it was martial arts based and I could get involved, I was trying all the time to learn and get better myself as a martial artist and as an individual, and, you know, be able to share that with my students and my kids. And it's, my kids are the reason I did that TV show, because I didn't, growing up, like I said, you know, rough upbringing. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody wants to have a sob story or whatever the case. And I say that in jest, but it was rough growing up. And I don't, that's fine. But I'd like to be able to share with my kids, you know, and show them pictures or video of experiences that I had growing up. Like my wife has, you know, VHS tapes of their Thanksgiving and Christmas. And, you know, she can share with the kids and see her as a kid and interacting with her family and stuff. And I don't have any of that. So when this opportunity came about to do the TV show, I'm like, I really don't necessarily want to do a reality show where they're going to be trying to make us look goofy, right? I don't want to do that. But at the same time, man, if I do it and it's done right, what a great thing for my kids. They did it with me. And then for them to be able to share that with their kids. And then my oldest daughter is 28. She's got 2 kids. You know, my son, he's got kids. And I'm like, they could show their grandkids like, hey, your great grandfather, right? Look what he did back in the day and the type of guy he was and how he interacted with these people. And you can read comments about what people thought of him and his philosophy and how he taught and all that. And I just, you know, I was like, man, it's worth it, you know, taking a risk, doing it for that. And so that was my purpose, not necessarily to try to get my 15 minutes of fame and all that. I don't, honestly, I tell people, you know, I go, what do I say to, I go, like, everybody knows LeBron James. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, and he's rich, right? They're like, oh, yeah. Who owns the team that he plays for? And no, people can't answer that. I go, you can look it up, but off the top of your head, you wouldn't know. And if he walked in here right now, you wouldn't know who he is. That's who you want to be for two reasons. One, you have some, you know, anonymity. You don't have, you know, people coming up to you all the time. But also, he pays LeBron's salary and everybody else's. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, you want to be that guy. So I don't care about that so much as far as being in the public eye. I know I have to promote my business and whatnot, so I'll do that kind of stuff. But the other stuff, I mean, you know, if there's an opportunity, great. If it's not, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, and I'm not seeking it out. So,
very nice. Yeah, you definitely hit it on. I'm glad that you mentioned the Kempo side. I know we had talked before. You know, that right. You teach some of the kind of Kempo techniques and yep. whatnot, and you had some Kaji Kempo experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to bring that up, but then you already got to it. So you're definitely yeah. channeling the those black belt powers there.
Listen, what I do, there's several other Kempo self-defense techniques that I teach, but five sword, I'm like, man, that's one of the more intricate ones, even though it's basic. It's got a lot of moves to it. And they're like, but they love it. Like, I'm trying to teach them delayed sword, and they're having trouble with that. But five sword, they got it down. I'm like, it's crazy, man. But it's, you know, that one, the sleeper, glancing salute. There's several of them that I teach that I like. They fit what I do as far as, you know, and Kempo is a system, you know, that's self-defense based too, which is why I guess I gravitated to it, because that, again, even fighting, kickboxing, point fighting, whatever I did, it was always the goal of practicing and training what I was doing on the floor. And if it can work in a controlled environment, chances are I can make it work in real life. And so that's why I would do it. So it's, yeah.
Very nice. No, once again, I'm glad that you mentioned the actual techniques. When we were talking before,
right.
I was like, oh yeah, I teach some kind of Kempo techniques, you know,
yep.
full disclosure. Yep. I was kind of thinking like, do you really know?
No, listen, it happens, but this is what I'm saying. It goes into one of those things, man. Like you talk about, everybody talks about Bruce Lee was way ahead of his time, right? Way ahead of his time. People have different ideas about, you know, was he a real fighter or not? This, that, and the other. I don't really care. The thing is his philosophy is the thing of taking different things, different techniques and principles from different martial arts that work for you as an individual. And then, you know, creating your own style. Right. And that's what I do with my students. In fact, with my students, when they get ready to go to black belt, and I don't care what age they are, you have to create some combinations and self-defense of your own that aren't the stuff that I taught you. There's probably, we've got, I think there are nine belts in our system. There's probably 3, 4, 5 self-defense techniques for each. And so you've got that. And then now you've got to create your own. But the thing is, just like with Kempo, it flows, right? You hit a person, you have to think about what is that strike going to do to that body. So now we get into the science of it, right? And, you know, kinesiology and how our bodies move. And so it can get deep, but I try to start teaching that on an elementary level for the younger kids. And as they get older, try to explain it a little bit, you know, in more detail, but it's important to understand that. And you take that stuff. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Just like Bruce Lee said, I sit here, feel like I'm, you know, like, oh, this dude's just a Bruce Lee lover. But it works. If it works, it works. It shouldn't matter who created it, this, that, and the other. The idea of, you know what, if you want to learn to defend yourself, you have to. Every system is limited. Boxing is limited because there's no grappling, right? Taekwondo is limited because there's hardly any hand strikes at all. It's just you have, you know, different limitations. And so you can, but there's good things at range. a kicking art like Taekwondo is good. That's why Bruce Lee trained with Jun Ri, right, in Taekwondo, to learn how to kick, right? And so, and he trained with boxers to learn how to box, and the boxing footwork. All of those things are important, and you need to be able to, you know, do that. And, you know, mixed martial arts shows you that today. There's guys, you know, you have to be well-rounded. You can be great. Like, you know, there's, I've got my favorite fighters like everybody else, but some of my favorite fighters aren't as versed in all ranges of fighting. They're just really good, and they keep people from getting to them with the range that they have. But once someone can, you know, can keep up with them there, they're going to be hurting. And that's how it, that was the evolution of mixed martial arts anyway. But you saw that as we go along. And now you have to be well-rounded. And my thing is, that's well-rounded for competition. I want my students to be well-rounded for the street. And it's a difference. And people are like, well, you teach mixed martial arts. I'm like, sort of. I'm like, don't, because I don't want to, you know, make people believe that I teach, you know, MMA as a sport, because I don't. I teach different things. I'm not a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but I do know some wrestling. I know how to sprawl. I know how to get people in different positions on the ground. But my goal is not to get you into a submission on the ground. We're fighting outside. I need to get up. So my thumb in your eye works best if I can get to it, right? And so that's the kind of stuff that I'm teaching. If you're down there, you need to know how to fall. You need to know how to move. You need to get yourself free. Don't get trapped, that kind of stuff. So I do teach those things, but I'm not going to teach anyone to be able to compete in a jiu-jitsu tournament. That's not going to work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. However, I did in my, you know, if I can toot my own horn just a little bit, I'm a student. She got, so listen, I don't like kata. I learned more traditional Taekwondo, right? Horse stance, throw your techniques from that, down blocks, throw your kicks, and you know, from there. I teach everything now from a boxing stance, because to me, that's better for self-defense. Well, I got away, and I used to teach bo staff and, you know, and katanas, and I would teach nunchucks and all that. Got away from all that. All I do now, and I will, if they want to learn it, I'll teach them some stuff on the side, go home and work on it, come back, I'll give you some more. But I do use these, you know, the Kali a lot, and I use the sticks and then teach them how to do it empty-handed, the adults with the weapon in the hand, that kind of stuff. But I have one girl, she wanted to learn the Kali. She wanted to put it into a kata. So I took some of the katas that we do now and added it to it. And we went to the state games in 2022. And she's going to compete in Kali, because they are in weapons kata. So they have weapons kata. And I'm like, okay, she's going to do it. Now, we go to most of these open tournaments. You don't see very many Kenpo people competing. So I'm like, whatever. These karate people don't know, you know, Kali. So they're going to look at it. As long as she looks good, she'll be fine. Well, they had this Filipino grandmaster at the state games this year. And she's going to judge my student doing some sticks. I'm like, holy mackerel. I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, I'm not a black belt in Kali. So I'm like. So she goes, and the black belt meeting, if they make a mistake in your black belts, and she was, one of the judges will take one full point off. So she competed. She went to throw a kick, stationary kick, and she kind of lost her balance. She caught herself, but she lost it. So one of the judges did, not the Filipino grandmaster. She got full points, 9.99 from her. And I was, and they came up to her later and was talking to her and asking her where she learned it. And I'm like, my thing is, though, is not so much the Kali, the weapon I take. And then I'm like, okay, how would I use this if I was doing the kata? Because katas, you know, you're not going to do a kata in a real fight either, right? So, but how would I use this? What type of technique would I use in this kata if I had these Kali sticks? And that's what I did. And understanding, and a lot of that does come from, you know, the type of martial arts like Kenpo, understanding that it's science, right? It's how does the body move? What type of things happens when you kick a person here? And then what would that, it would lead you to your next technique, right? And so I take that philosophy and I apply it to other things. And that's kind of how I teach my students to think, because I apply it the way it works for me. And I can kind of help you figure out how it applies for you. I've been doing it long enough, but you have to, I'm going to teach you a lot because I got to promote you in something, right? So I'll teach you my stuff, but I want you to take that not as a, this is it. This is what I have to do. If I don't do this, I mess it up. Because I've had that happen where students will go to do something with a technique and they throw something different. And I'm like, they're like, oh, I messed up. I'm like, no, you didn't mess up. I go, that's different. And that was natural. You felt that. And that's what you would do in a real fight. So I don't want you to think ever that if I teach you something and you don't do it correctly, that it's wrong. I want you to do it the way I taught you for the test. Because again, I got to teach something. I want to have some kind of system that I'm teaching, not just let people do whatever they want. But that's why I also give them the opportunity to create their own techniques so that they can showcase that they understand that they have to be able to do things that work for them. And I go, by the time you get to black belt, you know, here with me, you're not going to look, everybody may start out looking similar because you don't know anything different but what I'm teaching you. But as we go along and you learn that you have to pick the things that work best for you, you're all going to fight different. You're going to move when we do self-defense differently. It's just, and that's okay. And it should be that way. And I've had students come from other schools and it wasn't that way. And I find that when we talk about teaching, people teach a lot of times the way they were taught, right? Because that's all they know. And I think sometimes as instructors, we can become lazy because, again, I may have forgotten more than I'm going to teach them. So do I need to really hone my skills any more than I'm doing? Absolutely, you do. But a lot of them don't think of it that way. They don't look at it that way. I was just with, like I said, one of my instructors, Jim West. I was just out in Wyoming the earlier part of the month, you know, because he was giving a speech there, but also doing seminars and whatnot. And so I went out to help with the seminars because, again, that gives me an opportunity to train and, you know, get back into it myself so that I can come back. And I did, came back with stuff that I had forgotten that I'd learned a long time ago. Oh, yeah, right. Let me show this to my students. And I think that's important for us as instructors to also always be a student, right? I tell folks, you can't learn everything there is to learn in martial arts in five lifetimes. So I used to put something on the whiteboard where I put down, you know, you're a basketball player, you're a football player, baseball player, you're a martial arts student because you are. And it is different. I try to explain that to some parents that this isn't just an activity like your kid playing soccer. That's important. Team sports, I'm not discounting that, but martial arts is different. It's a way of life. It's a way that you know, it's not just about the fighting aspect. If you learn and do all the other things, you're not going to have to fight. I mean, right? The art of fighting without fighting, right? And, you know, why do you learn how to fight? So I don't have to fight, right? Daniel San, right on the boat. But it's true. It's cliche. It's stuff they say in a movie, but it's the truth. If you walk around confident without your head down, you respect people and they respect you, chances are you're not going to get into too many fights. I mean, that's just what it is. But if you're quiet, you act scared all the time, you get picked on. That's the nature of things, right? So I focus on those things and teaching those things to the kids more than I do the fighting. And I tell the parents, I'm going to teach your kid what respect is and what integrity is. And I'm going to teach them how to do a good sidekick, too. Don't get me wrong, in case they need it. But I think those things are more important for kids, you know, as they develop. So because a lot of times people fight because they're scared, you know, and not, you know, if I'm confident, I don't really need to fight. I can avoid this. I can walk away. No big deal. But when they're scared, they fight. And it's, you know, it's a shame. I think I wish more people would see martial arts for what it truly is. But again, I think that some of us instructors, I do this full time, but I am nowhere near on the level of income as some of these other guys out here that I follow and I watch. These guys are killing it from a business perspective. But I think what they've done in doing that is that they've put us on the same level as other activities. And that's why parents see it that way. They don't see martial arts as you'll have folks say that, you know, we're character development, you know, or what do they say? Child development, you know, program, but we use martial arts. And I think a lot of them do that because they don't teach good martial arts, for one. So they do that. But martial arts always did that. So why not be a good martial arts instructor and then explain how these kids are going to learn these different life skills? We're life skills educators. Some of y'all don't even have, you got a high school diploma, barely. So don't, you know, and I'm not beating those guys up because, listen, they're making the money, man. I can't compete there. But I just have a certain way I want to teach martial arts, and the things that I want to impart, it's not allowing me to do that and to be on that level financially. But that's okay, because the kids that I'm affecting, and I tell folks, most martial arts schools, especially the larger ones, their student population is like a pyramid. They have a bunch of beginners. And as you go closer and closer to the top of ranks, there's fewer and fewer people. And I think a lot of that is because there's not a lot for them to continue to learn as they move up. And so they get, you know, they get bored or whatever, and they want to move on to other things. I mean, you're going to have the ones that are going to transition, go to college or whatever, start playing football at school or whatever, but move. But generally it's that way. And I go, my school is exactly the opposite. We are like an upside down pyramid. I don't have very many beginners because I don't do a lot of recruiting. But as you move up, I have more advanced students, kids that have been with me. I've got one. I just wrote her a letter of recommendation for the she wants to join the Navy, right? She'll go to get a Navy ROTC scholarship to college. She's been training with me since she was 6. I got another kid. He was in here yesterday with his brother and sister. He's 15. His brother, he'll be 15 next month. His brother's 10. His sister's 8. He started when he was 4 years old. His mom wasn't even pregnant with the other two. That, and I don't do contracts. A lot of the bigger schools making all the money, they do contracts. Mm-hmm. I don't, because I want people to come because they feel that they're still getting something out of it. The parents feel there's still value for their kids training with me. And I'd rather do it that way. Right. And then you don't feel like, well, I got to keep going because I have a contract. Nope. If you want to quit, just let me know. I asked 30 days, but if you don't give it to me, I mean, what am I going to do? I have a contract. Right. But I think that helps me, because the kid that chooses to do something else, and that mom is talking to another mom saying, hey, you know, I've been looking about to put my kid in martial arts. Well, you know, little Johnny over here, he was doing martial arts with Kenshin Martial Arts, and he had a great time. He just wanted to do something else. You should take your kid over there, because they had a good experience as a parent as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about the quality over the quantity. And
right.
You know, with today's kind of world, and you know, attentions are you know, strung around to a million different things.
Correct.
You know, the quality product is going to be the thing that people choose. So
right, it is.
So yeah, definitely have to put that out there. Yeah. So I like that. I like your philosophy and outlook on how that on. You know, the teaching and how the you know, having the students and you know, developing those skills, helping them to develop those skills, because you know, at least the way I see it, you know, a lot of today's, you know, young people, they just don't get those, you know, that grit and that confidence. And I don't know what's happening, but it's got to be a change.
It's definitely, the culture has definitely changed, and I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 46. I think 46. So you're not far from me. So yeah, we're same generation, and it's just, I think that it has changed. I think part of it, the whole helicopter parent thing, I think that's an issue. And here's my thing, right? I tell folks, you can love your child too much. And then people are like, what are you talking about? I can't love my child. You can, because what you do is you're trying to protect them from everything. And you can't. You need to be teaching them how to deal with those adversities instead of trying to protect them from all of them, right? Because you can't. There's certain things, obviously, we all are going to do that. But, you know, if your kid, be an example. When I do a black belt test, it doesn't matter how old the kid is, adult, doesn't matter. I don't allow any parents in the test. Like a lot of guys will do, they'll rent out a gym someplace and they'll make it a big production and all that. And that's great. But they aren't under a whole lot of adversity, really, right? And then they also have the fact that they can look back at their mom and they're like, go ahead, baby, you can do it, right? And you should encourage your child. But at some point in their life, you're going to have to deal with something difficult. And I want to know as a parent that they're going to be able to do that when I'm not there. Because I tell these parents, I go, I hope that you live to be 150 years old. But the reality is that you're not. And so you should want your child to, you know, be able to survive without you. And I go, this is a great test. They're going to come in there and for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, however long it takes, they're going to be put under a lot of pressure physically and mentally. Now, I already know they know the techniques because I've taught it to them, and I wouldn't let them test if they didn't. A lot of people, does anybody fail the test? No, because I'm not going to let you test unless I think you're ready. But it's not just me. You have to think you're ready. If you don't think you're ready, then you don't do it. And even on that day, I tell them all, you can choose to walk out of here right now. You don't have to do it, but you can fail. And the only way you're going to fail is if you quit, right? And that's it. You got to keep going. You're going to be placed up against a lot of adversity, and you're going to have to fight, and you're going to be like, man, I can't keep going. Keep going anyway, right? Because you won't always be able to stop. And I think a lot of parents appreciate that. And then when they come back, because I do allow them to come back before I tie the belts on and all that, because I make them all write a speech as, you know, first degree, you know, what your journey was getting to martial arts and all that. And so they do that, and I have the parents watch them do that, you know, break some boards, and then I'll tie their belts on for the first time while they're still sweaty and nasty. And I think that being there to have experienced that part with them is great. There's a lot of tears most of the time, and more so from, I did it, right? I didn't think I could, but I did. And it changes you, and it changes their attitude about life. And so for me, that's, as an instructor, that's the cool thing, right? Like, hey, I know what adversity is growing up, right? I know how, and I know these kids, parents are not the way they're not like my parents, and these kids aren't growing up the way I did. But if I was able to take martial arts and, you know, go into the military and be successful there and retire and win a bunch of awards and do well in martial arts and win titles and medals in martial arts and all that, then what can they do, right? They've got a support system that I didn't have. And so how far can these kids go in life? And that's, you know, so that's exciting for me, especially with the martial arts part when I'm in here and it happens. And you'll see that as an instructor one day, and it's different for them all, right? Some of them, it happens right away. Some of them, it doesn't happen until after they're black belts. But one day, if they train long enough, it's going to click and you're going to see it clear as day as an instructor. That kid has got it, or that adult's got it. That team, they've got it now, right? And now they can really start learning. And it's such a rewarding feeling that, don't get me wrong, man, I have a family too. And would I like to be in a place where I can fly my family to Europe whenever I felt like it for vacation and stuff? Sure. But, you know, instead I'll go to Orlando, right? And go to Disney World, freaking, you know, Universal Studios or something. Still have a great time, still have, you know, build memories with my family, but I'm also able to change people's lives at the same time in a meaningful way. And that's important to me.
Yeah. No, yeah, the teaching side of it, you know. So I taught and still trying to teach a capoeira for many years.
And, nice.
It's a labor of love, you know. You know, you're really passionate about the art. You're really passionate about people. You know, you're just gonna do it.
There are owners
that don't, you know, that don't make the big bucks, and you know, right, are scraping by, but you know, they do it for the love.
And so, and the you talk about capoeira. Mark Dacascos and Only the Strong, right? I bet my wife's like, you're like a freaking library of these movies and stuff. I go, I've seen them all multiple times, right? And there's a kick, and I don't know exactly what it's called, but you would if you stand on your lead foot, you would step over, place that rear hand to the floor, and you come back with a kick with that lead foot, right? And generally it looks like a hook kick, but at an angle, right? And I'm not sure what it's called, but I love that kick, and I've taught it to several of my students that are really good kickers, because I go, if you can catch somebody with this, it's almost like the Kyokushin kick where they sacrifice themselves and throw their butt, but without doing that, right? You can still fight, you know, if you do that with capoeira. But I love them all, man. It's just what's your favorite? All of them. That's my favorite. Any one of them that I can practice at the time, that's my favorite.
Oh my gosh, right? you're like my spirit animal, and you know, mentioning Only the Strong and capoeira.
Yeah,
that's my jam there. And and so, just for your information and for the listeners' information as well, the kick that he's describing is what's called the Mea Lua Jicompasso, and it is that translates to half moon compass. That's if Capoeira was to have a signature move, the Mailo Jicapazzo is
distinctive. You definitely would recognize it from there. There's another actor, Capoeira Mestre, kind of a light-skinned Brazilian guy, long hair. He was in
Lateef Crowder is probably who.
Yes. Yep, that's it. Yes. Yeah. He's really good. I've watched him in a lot of stuff, and I mean, he's really good.
Nice. We could go on and on and on and on.
I know, right?
Hopefully I can get you for a part two and a part three.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh my goodness, there's so many things that we want to cover, and you know, I know we don't have a time limit per se, but
right,
I gotta wrangle this thing in, or we're gonna have a 10 hour podcast.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I you know, I would go crazy if you know we don't at least touch on Kitty Kai.
Right.
I mean, goodness, there's so many parts, so many things about that I want to say. I don't want to, you know, spoil anything, because I, you know, ever since I started watching it, I've told every martial artist I know, like, go watch the show. One, because I enjoy it. Two, because I just want to talk about it. I've seen it, you know, I've watched through it a bunch of times, and I can't get anybody to talk to me about it. So
right. Well, I'll be very short with it, and I won't disclose anything either that'll spoil it for anybody. But I think that the concept of the show came about because the production company owner had kids in martial arts and also was a fan of, you know, Cobra Kai. So, like all of us, right? And so, what would a real Cobra Kai type show look like, right? And so that was their concept. And when they came to me, I got a phone call one day, and actually an email, and then said, hey, can I call you? And then I was like, sure. So I talked to one of the production guys in New York, and they sent a producer out to see me about 2 or 3 weeks later, and we talked about it, and I agreed to do it based on the concept. I just told them that, you know, I get it's a docu-series, right? But it's a reality show, and I go, I know how that can go. I don't want to make a mockery of the martial arts, because this is my life. I don't have a day job. You understand? Teaching martial arts has been there my entire life, but this is what I do to provide for my family. So I don't want to make it look bad. I don't want to do anything that could hurt that, you know, and I can't be the bad guy. That's just not my personality. It's not how I teach. And they are like, oh, no, you won't be the bad guy. I promise that. And I'm like, okay. And so I agreed to do it. And there were some things, you know, production wise. And again, if we do a part two of this, we can talk about it in more detail, that they wanted to happen. And they tried to push certain things. One being, they wanted us to wear our uniforms the entire time. And I go, that's just not realistic, and I'm not going to do it. And so I think I was kind of a thorn in their side a little bit about keeping things more realistic and not looking like a goofy reality show. And I think my school, my students, my family, we came off that way for the most part. At least that's the feedback I got from people, folks from, you know, I got a message from a girl in Australia about when I talked about the girls fighting and all that kind of stuff. And it, you know, that was really cool. I'm like, okay. And a lot of feedback from folks saying, hey, you know, you did a great job, you know, and whatnot. And, you know, really appreciate how you represented the martial arts and the military and all that. And I was like, all right, that's cool. So that I did my job, and my kids will be able to look at this forever and be proud of me and what I did. And, you know, yeah, that's, it was good. It was, the name itself, I was hesitant about, and I was against initially, just because I'm like, come on, man, it's a ripoff, and it's saying Kitty Kai. People aren't going to take that serious. And when I talked to the folks at Discovery, they said, listen, these folks spend a lot of money doing these studies, trying to figure out these names. And I'm like, okay, guess y'all know what you're doing. And later, after it came out, when you Googled one, the other would come up somehow. And I go, that's what they were doing. They wanted to attach it that way. They were like, if there's not going to be any type of trade mark infringement on the name, they're going to probably do it. And they did. And I get it from, again, from a business standpoint, marketing standpoint, it makes sense. But, no, aside from that, I think it came off really well as a show. It's a good show to watch. If you're a martial artist, like you say, it's something good to watch. You see some folks, you know, competing, see how people are. And I will be 100% honest with this part. Right? Nobody was acting. I had people ask me, hey, the Kung Fu guy, was he acting? I'm like, no. I've seen it because he's local to me. I've seen him at tournaments, and he's exactly that way with his students. Crazy to me. I'm like that people would take their kids to somebody like that. But I get it. And even with him, like Kung Fu, you see old people doing Kung Fu, right? You don't see a lot of kids doing Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, even, you know, he's got his issues, but he's made kids interested in Kung Fu. And I'm like, I wouldn't be that way. That's not my philosophy. It's not the way that I talk to my students and parents. But there's kids doing Kung Fu because this guy. So there's that, right? So, yeah, but yeah, that, so it was a great show. You should watch it.
That right. Passion drives, you know, drives a lot of people and inspires people. So, you know, yeah, there's, you know, you take the good with the bad. So that,
exactly,
you know, I can understand that. So, with the name thing, you know, I kind of follow a lot of the, you know, entertainment, Hollywood kind of things. And
right.
Yeah. Hollywood is very, or, you know, the bean counters and all that. Yeah. They're all about what's going to get, you know, what's going to get the people's attention. And, you know, there's so many movies and things that were created simply because of the name recognition.
Because of the name. Exactly. Well, here's some, I guess, behind the scenes trivia for people that have watched it, and for yourself. That name won out, but the runner up name was Karate Dads.
What?
I know, right?
Oh,
that was
goodness.
That was the two finalists, right? Oh, Kitty Kai or Karate Dads.
Yeah, they right? picked the right name.
I was like Dance Moms? No, man, we can't do that. So yeah.
They definitely picked the right name.
And then I told them, you can't do Karate Dads anyway, because I own a school, and the person that brings these kids are the moms 9 times out of 10, not the dads.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know, so,
for
sure. But yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's huge. No, thank you. Thank you for
yes,
that.
Yes, sir.
We'll definitely have to get into that more on parts 2, 3, 4 through
right.
25.
That'll work.
Thank you so much for that. So let's move to our lightning round here. This is going to be a little bit different since you're not, you know, full-time Kenpo guy, but we'll just kind of throw it out there. So first question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Sidekick, and more, all of them, but more specifically a spinning sidekick.
Very nice. I like it. Okay. Do you have a favorite form or set? Now, you kind of mentioned that you're not really the form guy,
right.
But
so throw it out there. Yeah. And I will, and I do them. I can do them. It's just not my thing because it's not self-defense based, right? I mean, supposedly. But in Taekwondo, you have two schools. You have the International Taekwondo Federation and all of its, you know, branched out organizations and the katas that they perform. And then you have the World Taekwondo, used to be Federation, now it's just World Taekwondo, the Olympic style stuff. They have two sets of forms that they do. Well, I do the first one, and it's the Chun-Ji forms. And my favorite one is called Chung Mu. It is the last form you learn before getting your black belt. So there's 9 of them total, and that's the 9th one before you get the black belt. And it's a very, very powerful kata. It is, there's 24 in that system. It is the most powerful one of them all. And it, my instructor, who was the 4th degree, he did that kata, right, that a red belt learns before they get black belt, until he was a 4th degree and would win with it. Because it was such a powerful kata. And I did the same thing. I would compete with that kata, win every time. Yeah.
Nice.
So, Chung Mu.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the final question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Man. Oh, gosh.
And I usually say, besides Ed Parker, But in your case, I'm gonna have to say besides Bruce Lee.
Right. And so, and that being the case, then it probably would be Ed Parker. I think because of the way I approach martial arts is from that same mindset as a Kenpo stylist, right? Is the science of it, and because it makes sense to me. And so, yeah, it would probably Ed Parker and learn as much as I could from him.
Excellent. I like it. I like it. All right. Well, yeah, no, I thank you so much for being on and
Yes,
telling me your
sir.
story. I'm really overjoyed that I reached out to you first. So, I'm gonna
Right,
try and get all of the other Kitty Kai folks on.
Right.
But you touched on this, and this was something that stood out to me is, yeah, you're definitely were. There goes the dogs again. You were in a definitely did not come across in the same way that the others on the show did, and it was much more positive, wholesome, way,
Appreciate that.
and not sensationalized and all of that. So
Right.
yeah, I really appreciated that, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try and get some. Talk to these guys, and so
Yeah.
you were the first one on the list. I was like,
Well,
I got to
cool.
get the wholesome one first, and then
That's cool.
work my way down.
Nah, no doubt, right? No doubt. And John Chung is somebody that I, in fact, because they didn't put this in the show because they filmed a lot of stuff. They have enough for probably another six, seven
Oh
episodes.
yeah.
I have a VHS tape John Chung doing all of those Chun Ji forms all the way, all 24 of them. And because he was known as the Kata King back in the day. And so I've known of him for such a long time. So to be on a show with him, and he off camera, him and I talked a lot, and he kind of, I don't want to say took me under his wing necessarily, but he shared a lot of things with me because, and to have the respect of somebody like that, again, for me coming from where I come from, is such validation for everything that I've done, hey, I've done really well. I've done some good things that I have guys like that, that I've watched since I was younger, respect me and what I'm doing. And that, is such, such a humbling feeling for me. It's, and emotional, right, as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I pretty much fell out of my chair when he popped up because,
Right.
the Panther Production videos back in the
Right.
day,
Yeah, right.
I was like,
Exactly.
oh
Yep.
my God, like
Yeah.
I couldn't believe,
Yep.
you see these
You know,
reality
and
shows, it's like, oh, like they're gonna,
he,
people
yeah,
we
he
haven't heard
messages
of, and
me
then,
all the time. He invited us to his tournament the year, every year. I just got the message the other day, but he invites, because he has his tournament in January, and he invites us, and he says it's by invitation only, right? And I'm like, wow, that's cool, right? This guy John Chung is inviting me personally to his tournament, and it's an invitation only tournament. I was like, gosh, that, and I, my students don't understand the gravity of that and what that really means, but I do. And I'm like, for what I'm doing, you know what? I'll sacrifice not being able to go to Europe with my family, right? To
Yeah.
have that, because that type of legacy is more important to me, you
Very
know.
nice, very nice. All right, so
Yes,
now
sir.
is the time for shameless self-promotion, so you can
Yes, sir.
plug anything you want, say anything else that you want before we close out. And yeah, you have the floor and the final word there.
Yeah, well, I'll first start by thanking you for inviting me to come on. This is actually the first podcast that I've done, so it's great. And then talking about the show, it's something that I had considered doing myself, taking clips from the show and maybe doing some, commentating on what happened and maybe some behind the scenes. I thought that would be cool. But even doing something like this and just talking about the show, that I think that would be cool too. So I appreciate that and giving me opportunity to get out and speak. But if folks in North Carolina, right, and you're in the North Charlotte area, come and see us. My focus again is on self-defense and teaching people how to fight and defend themselves. I don't proclaim to be the best out there, but I'm good, right? I can teach you some good things and hopefully make you better than me. That's the goal. And like I tell folks there, and I, this is my philosophy since I was a kid, there's always somebody bigger, faster, and stronger. And it's something that they mentioned on the show. You need to fight that person and let them know they had a fight, right? That's my thing. Like, you might beat me, but I promise you won't go away unscathed, right? We're gonna fight. And so, and that's just having that tenacity, not just for martial arts, but just in life and everything that you're doing, whether it's kids and they're working on their schoolwork, or, you know, you're trying to get promoted in a job and there's certain things you need, go after it, man. Don't, you know, leave it all on the floor, right? And so if that's something that you're looking for, then, you know, come and see me. You know, we might be able to, you know, do some things. So other than that, I mean, again, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again. I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. And thank awesome. You so much.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.